This is Pat, and I'm coming to you on a gorgeous sunny day in June, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, June the 5th. And on the front page, a Clinton student overcomes hardships to earn diploma by Edith Brady Looney. For most high school students, their teenage years are a time of forging friendships, planning for the future, and the transition to adulthood that begins with a walk across the stage for a diploma. Karina Atkins, known as Kai to her friends and family, was determined to finish her work at the Clinton Academy and leave Clinton High School with a diploma, despite the steep hill she was forced to climb to see her dream become a reality. A diagnosis of ovarian cancer at age 16 halted her homeschool education. She began a round of chemotherapy that left her sick and exhausted. With cancer therapy behind her, Karina made the decision to complete her education and join her peers for all the experiences high school had to offer. "I wanted to go back to school, but I felt like I was a little behind everyone else," Karina said in a recent interview. But doctor appointments and the social anxiety that caused her to trade public schools for lessons at home were still an issue. With the help of her mother, Amber Sperling, and her sister, Nadia, a former student at the Clinton Academy, Karina consulted with school officials about her possible enrollment in the Academy, a program that offers high school students individual instruction on a flexible schedule with the goal of completing high school. In October 2024, Karina started her work at Clinton Academy. The Academy was so much better. You can work at your own pace, and they are so understanding. It's quiet there, at least in the afternoon class I was in, said Karina. The negative perceptions some may hold of what is commonly known as alternative education is not accurate, said Karina. I guess there's a stereotype about bad kids there, and I suppose there are a few, but even then, they're just trying to get their stuff done too, she said. Karina now receives monthly injections of a new cancer drug that replaces the chemotherapy that proved ineffective. It's contained, Amber Sperling said of her daughter's cancer. It's treatable, but it's not curable. The initial cancer treatments and the week-long recovery periods caused Sperling to leave her restaurant job for 3 months. The financial hardship has taken a toll on the family. Cancer is expensive, she said. Our lives definitely changed that day, and I don't feel like I've been the same since. It's been a rough couple of years for our family, but we got through it and we've had great support. Our family was close before, but this unfortunate circumstance has made us extremely close, said Karina's mother. As part of Karina's cancer treatments at St. John's Children's Hospital in Springfield, she met a patient advocate who recommended her to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, a nonprofit group that grants special wishes to youth battling a critical illness. Bridget Becker and Kathleen Brewer, foundation volunteers from Clinton, worked with Karina's family to arrange a week in Tokyo, Japan for Karina, her sister, and mother. The trip in mid-May included a visit to the digital art museum Team Lab Planets, a street market where she and her sister tried squid for the first time, and shopping at Shibuya Crossing. When Karina returned from her overseas trip, she believed she would be going to the high school with her teachers, Academy Director Kate Dierdorf and Denise King, to pick up her diploma. But her teachers and Clinton High School Principal Jerry Wayne had other plans for the 19-year-old. On May 22nd, with her friends and family in their seats in front of a stage at the high school, Karina was escorted into the gym for a private graduation ceremony that began with her teachers helping her into a cap and gown. "I thought I was just going to pick up my diploma. It was a complete surprise," said the new graduate. After she greeted the school principal on stage, Karina received her diploma from Dierdorf. Denise King, every family member and friend, the two classmates who had attended, received a hug from Karina after she left the stage. As I handed her diploma to her, I was feeling an immense joy at being present for such an accomplishment. Proud to know her and honor her, and I was proud of the staff at the high school for dropping everything to make this happen for one of our students, Dierdorf said. Karina's mother becomes emotional when she reflects on her daughter's path to a diploma. I will forever be grateful that we have Clinton Academy, because when she was sick, the least of my worries was school. I had one goal, and that was for her to get better. But she was determined that cancer would not define her, and she wanted a normal teenage life. If it hadn't been for the Clinton Academy, she would never have been able to go back to school. The teachers there are outstanding and treated Kai with utmost respect and love. As for her future plans, Karina would like to attend the Art Institute in Chicago and pursue a career as an illustrator. Her supporters have no doubt that she will accomplish her goal. She works so hard and sees the sunshine in everything. She's immensely grateful for the smallest things, said Dierdorf. And also from the front page, the city considering other locations for the toddler park, Gordon Woods reporting. The city has postponed a decision to create a toddler park at the Clinton Rogue Court while the council considers alternative locations. The announcement came during a Tuesday City Council meeting after comments by resident Seth Reddington questioned the safety of the location for small children. Reddington said the adjacent railroad tracks, which pass within just a few feet of the park, were a significant safety hazard, citing practices involving potential derailments. Reddington also felt traffic along West Main Street posed a hazard to young children who would use the park. Commissioner Dan Ballinger followed Redding's remarks, said the council already had decided to look at other sites for the toddler park because of community feedback about similar concerns with using the Rogue Court. In other council business, City Administrator Tony Harris said he was placing on file the cost of the Farnsworth Group to complete the initial TIF district boundary map, the TIF legal description, and other associated documents. The total cost will be $16,500. The work is for the city's newly planned TIF tax increment financing district. Commissioner John Wise said workers had fixed a water main joint leak near Walgreens. In an update on the new water tower project, he said the engineer was waiting for the state to release the interest rate information on low-interest loans and was also waiting to hear back on the application. The council approved the following: $12,185 to Heart Technologies for a department network upgrade, $7,850 to M&M Pump for a pressure washer for the fire department. In the news, Community Flag Day set for June 13th. In Clinton, the public is invited to a Community Flag Day ceremony on June the 13th at Weldon Springs State Park. The event is sponsored by the DeWitt Clinton Daughters of the American Revolution and will begin at 10 a.m. at Veterans Park, located on the park's east side. The DAR will honor Sarah and Keith Volker with a flag display for their consistent and proper display of the American flag at their home at 1011 East Main Street. The chapter will also present a Community Service Award to Pat and Jean Rogers for their dedication and work with HOOAH, a veteran support group. The first Flag Day was proposed in 1916 by President Woodrow Wilson after he signed a presidential proclamation making June 14th Flag Day. An act of Congress on August 3, 1949, designated June 14th National Flag Day. Veterans Point at Weldon Springs State Park is an especially appropriate site for the local Flag Day ceremony, said Edith Brady Looney, regent of the DAR chapter. donors from our community and the U.S. came together to raise the fund for the Veterans Point Memorial to honor our veterans. The 50 flags of freedom flown on 7 special holidays to help pay tribute to the men and women who served and continue to serve in our nation's military, said Brady Looney. Veterans and their families are invited to attend a picnic luncheon at Setauquoi Shelter following the ceremony. Please RSV to phone number 309-824-5273 for the luncheon. That phone number again is 309-824-5273. Also in the news today, we have 2 obituaries. Kenneth Francis Fritz Robinson. Kenneth Francis Fritz Robinson, 74, passed away on May 22, 2026 at his home. Born on September 17, 1951 to Richard C. and Helen M. Robinson, he was nicknamed Fritz by his Irish grandmother on that day. Funeral service will be conducted at 10 a.m. on Saturday, June the 13th, 2026, at First Christian Church in Clinton, with Scott Marsh officiating. Burial will follow at Pleasant Valley Cemetery in Kenny. No visitation is planned. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Kenny Fire Protection District or Kenny Fire Department. Our second obituary is Violet R. Massey, that's M-A-S-S-E-Y, of Clinton. Violet R. Massey, 84, of Clinton, passed away at 8:25 on May the 27th, 2026, at her home in Clinton. Visitation was held on Tuesday, June the 2nd, at the Calvert Funeral Home. Memorials may be directed to Second Chance for Pets, Pet Adoption. DeWitt County Genealogical Society meeting June the 8th at the library. The DeWitt County Genealogical Society June meeting will be held on June 9th at 4 p.m. at Vespasian Warner Public Library. This month's speaker will be Kathy Popovich, Director of Illinois State Archives, who will deliver a program titled America at 250, Illinois Stories. The public is welcome to join us for this program. Anyone wishing to attend virtually may request a Zoom invitation by sending an email to dewittcgs@gmail.com by Monday, June the 8th. From the op-ed page, the approved state budget for fiscal year 2027, $55.9 billion. This is the On Point column by Richard Koritz. For an old farm boy who thinks having $200 in cash in his billfold is a lot of money, multiples of $1 billion is mind-boggling. My laser printer would run out of toner printing all of those zeros. Illinois is a massive state, and it has a massive budget. We could sit here and complain that this budget bill was passed in the dark of night, actually at 3 a.m. Springfield on June the 1st. Was it passed basically on party lines? Absolutely. This is a Democratic-controlled budget, and it will be signed by Democratic Governor Pritzker. Are Republicans complaining? Republican Senators Rose and Turner both voiced their objections to the press. Both are quoted as objecting to $150 million of sales tax revenue being transferred to the general fund instead of being used for roads. I get it. You have to at least put up a front to justify being a loyal opposition. Philosophically, I'm with Rose and Turner. Both are good legislators with strong rural backgrounds. Pragmatically and realistically, I do appreciate their opposition of overspending because it does provide a record for the future. However, everything comes down to the math. You either have the votes or you do not have the votes to prevail. Illinois is a very large geographical state. Illinois has tremendous assets in farmland and transportation. Farmland has very few residents per square mile. Illinois' population is in Cook County and the Collar counties. An Illinois farmer may live on and control 1,000 acres of prime farmland. There may be four votes there. Go to Cook County and that 1,000 acres may have 100,000 or more voters. 40% of Illinois voters live in Cook County. Do the math. Rural Illinois may not like the priorities of the Illinois budget, but rural Illinois simply does not have the votes to control the legislation. Chicago and Cook County have the votes. The budget passed both chambers, and Pritzker will certainly sign it. Our local legislators have done a great job in getting as much state resources directed to local concerns as possible. Our roads are getting better. There is state support for local schools and community infrastructure. All in all, it is simply better that we have passed the budget than to not have a budget. And special note, Fritz Robinson passed away this past week. His given name was Kenneth, but I never heard him called by anything other than Fritz. Fritz was the epitome of a locally involved citizen. Fritz was a self-employed farmer who never wanted a handout, but would give up his shirt to help another in need. Fritz was a true steward of the farmland and wished to always protect the soil from industrialization. He was a township supervisor and a volunteer fireman. Fritz cared for his family, community, and church. When you ask Fritz for his opinion, you got a direct answer without sugarcoating. We need more people with that approach to community. DeWitt County will be hard-pressed to replace his presence in the local community. Richard Corix is an Illinois native attorney and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. And from the other columns pages, Understanding the Ups and Downs of Pain During Recovery by Corey Zimney. Many equate pain with injury and thus assume that pain should be a straight line when recovering. So if pain flares up a bit, they worry that something is wrong. Maybe the injury is getting worse, or they overdid it the day before. In reality, pain often rises and falls during normal recovery, and these ups and downs do not automatically mean you're injuring yourself. Pain is more complex than a simple measure of tissue damage. Pain is best thought of as your body's alarm system. Early after an injury or surgery, that alarm is turned up on purpose to protect healing tissues. Even as the tissues recover normally, the alarm may remain slightly sensitive for a while. This means everyday movements, increased activity, or changes in routine can trigger pain even when the tissues themselves are safe. This sensitivity usually settles with time, movement, and confidence. A short-term increase in pain does not automatically mean damage has occurred. It often reflects a nervous system that's still learning what is safe again. Next day pain. Pain that shows up later, such as soreness the next day, is often blamed on overdoing it. While extreme overload can contribute to flare-ups, changes in pain from one day to the next are often a normal response to increased movement. Your body adapts to activity gradually, and mild soreness or stiffness can be part of that process, especially when trying something new or returning to activities you've avoided. Pain levels don't always match how well your body is healing. You are recovering successfully, even on days when pain feels worse. Stress, sleep, and mood matter. Your nervous system doesn't work in isolation. Poor sleep, emotional stress, worry, or fatigue can increase pain sensitivity. We often say, "You're getting on my nerves," when someone stresses us out. Biologically, that's true. Stressful events release chemicals that make nerves more sensitive. On stressful days, the pain alarm becomes easier to trigger, which is why pain may spike during busy weeks, after poor sleep, or during emotional strain, without any change in the injury itself. These influences are real and biological. They are not imagined or in your head. The body's healing chemistry. Your body naturally produces pro-inflammatory chemicals, which increase sensitivity, and anti-inflammatory chemicals, which reduce sensitivity, as part of the healing process. This balance shifts from day to day like a teeter-totter. Some days you may feel more sensitive, and other days less so. These shifts are a normal part of recovery and help explain why pain often fluctuates. Pain doesn't equal harm. One of the most important principles of recovery is this: pain does not always mean damage. Pain is often a sign of sensitivity rather than danger. Gradually, continuing to move, even with some discomfort, is often part of restoring normal function and confidence. When to check in. While fluctuating pain is common, steadily worsening pain, new symptoms, or pain accompanied by significant swelling, weakness, or loss of function should be discussed with a healthcare provider. Otherwise, normal ups and downs are normal and expected part of the recovery process. Healing isn't about eliminating every painful moment. It's about helping your body and nervous system feel safe enough to move forward one step at a time. Corey Zimny, PT, DPT, and PhD, is a professor at the University of South Dakota School of Health Sciences Physical Therapy Department and director of the PhD in Health Science Program. Dr. Zimny is part of the Center for Brain and Behavioral Research at the University of South Dakota and the Therapeutic Neuroscience Research Group, conducting research specifically in the areas of pain science and therapeutic alliance. And from our Savvy Senior column, How to Use AI Safely and Protect Yourself from Scams, by Jim Miller. Dear Savvy Senior, I keep hearing about AI in the news and how it's being used in scams. I am not very tech savvy and find it confusing. What should I know to protect myself? Confused Senior. Dear Confused, you're not alone. Many older adults are asking the same question. Artificial intelligence, or AI, is becoming part of everyday life, from smartphones and internet searches to banking and customer service. It's also making scams more convincing and harder to spot, which is why a basic understanding helps. The good news is you don't need to be a tech expert to use AI safely and with confidence. Know the basics. AI is technology that can create and analyze information in ways that seem human. It can write emails, answer questions, recommend products, generate images, and even mimic voices. While this can be helpful, it also means things you see or hear online may not always be accurate. If something seems unusual or too good to be true, take a closer look. Use it wisely. A good way to get comfortable with AI is to start small. Many smartphones include voice assistants like Siri or Google Assistant that can set reminders, check the weather, or answer questions. You can also try tools like ChatGPT or Claude to explain a news story, suggest recipes, or help draft a message. AI can also be useful for everyday tasks like comparing products, planning trips, or organizing a to-do list. Think of it as a helpful assistant, not a decision maker. Keep in mind that AI isn't perfect. It can give answers that sound confident, but may be outdated or inaccurate. For important matters like your health, finances, or legal issues, always double-check with a trusted source, such as your doctor, bank, or government website. Watch for scams. Scammers are using AI to make their schemes more convincing. You may receive an email that appears to be from your bank or Medicare, or a phone call that sounds like a family member. Be especially wary of urgent messages that pressure you to act quickly or warn that your account will be closed. Protect yourself. The most important habit for avoiding scams is to slow down. If you receive a suspicious call, text, or email, stop and assess the message. Don't click links, download attachments, or respond right away. Instead, contact the company or person directly using a phone number or website you trust, not the one provided in the message. Scammers now use AI to mimic voices and write convincing messages. Even if something sounds like it's from a family member, friend, or company, verify it in another way before taking action. Never share sensitive information like your social security number, bank details, or passwords unless you initiated the contact and trust the source. Banks and government agencies, including Medicare and Social Security, will not ask you for this information by phone or email. Urgent requests for payment by gift card, wire transfer, or cryptocurrency are also red flags. For added protection, use two-factor authentication. Keep your devices updated. You can even consider call blocking services from your mobile service provider. If something doesn't look right, take time to check it or ask a trusted friend or family member before responding. Keep learning. Technology is always changing, but there are ways to stay informed. Many libraries and senior centers offer classes on digital skills and online safety. Trusted resources like AARP's Fraud Watch Network at aarp.org/fraudwatch and the Federal Trade Commission's consumer.ftc.gov also provide up-to-date scam alerts and protection tips. In addition, internet and mobile provider Cox Mobile at cox.com/mobilesafety offers a library of research tips and online safety tools to keep you informed and secure online. AI may seem complicated at first, but a little awareness goes a long way. By staying cautious and building a few smart habits, you can protect yourself and make this technology work for you. And in sports, Brock Wilson pitches a no-hitter in Maroons 3-1 win over the Cardinals by Mark Rogers. The Maroons recently hosted a local rival, Warrensburg Latham Cardinals, on May the 18th. The first three innings were a pitcher's duel until the Maroons eked out a run on a Joss Bass triple and a sacrifice fly ball by Brock Wilson. These two were also Maroons' catcher-pitcher battery for the entire game. The Maroons then tacked on two more runs in the fifth inning on two hits and two walks to bring Clinton to a 3-0 lead. The Cardinals pulled their pitcher, putting in a reliever for the last two innings. The Maroons gave up a run in the sixth inning to the opposition on a walk and an error, but shut the Cardinals down in the seventh inning. The Maroons won 3-1. Brock Wilson pitched the entire game, earning a no-hitter in his comeback after shoulder surgery just over a year ago. And now to close with some dates in history. In 1947, U.S. Secretary of State George C. Marshall gave a speech at Harvard University in which he outlined the Marshall Plan. In 2021, Amazon.com announced that it would begin selling personal computers later in the year. And in 2004, the USS Jimmy Carter was christened in the U.S. Navy at Groton, Connecticut. With that, I'll say goodbye for today and be back with you again next week. Enjoy your day.